How quiet it is when we have the patience to be silent. How much we can learn in moments like these. We can learn to have patience with ourselves, to better understand and like who and what we are. We can learn to have patience with others, to better listen to what they say and how they feel. We can learn to have patience with life, to better work with it rather than against it. How much we do need silence. Silence for truth, so that we may learn wisdom. Silence for wisdom, so that we may love. Silence for love, so that we may be just. Silence for justice, so that we may live fully. May we be more patient and more silent, so that we may proceed with courage and compassion. Words of the Reverend Charles Gaines. Ubuntu is an African philosophy that sees human connection and interdependence as determinative of who we are as individuals. It has lots of different translations as words like this do, but it can be summed up in words like this. I am what I am because of others. I am what I am because of community, because of who we all are. Bishop Desmond Tutu gave this explanation in 2008. One of the sayings in our country, he writes, is Ubuntu, the essence of being human. Ubuntu speaks particularly about the fact that you can't exist as a human being in isolation. It speaks about our interconnectedness. You can't be human all by yourself. We think of ourselves far too frequently as individuals, separated from one another, whereas you are connected, and what you do affects the whole world. When you do well, it spreads out. It is for the whole of humanity. This is the true spirit of human development and the cause of human evolution, Ubuntu. Once again, we are proud to say, Ubuntu, I am what I am because of my community. You may have heard this story, but I like to share it. It's happened a few years ago. It's a true story. A man was sitting in his coffee shop in his neighborhood in New York City, and he looked across the room, and he saw Bill Moyers, that wonderful PBS commentator, which I know many of us like, drinking a cup of coffee. He stared for a few minutes to make sure, in fact, he was right, that it was him, and in the process became very excited to see this famous person in his little neighborhood coffee shop. So he got up from his chair, rushed over to Bill Moyers, and with great enthusiasm said to him, "Do you know who you are?" Well, Bill Moyers understood that this was really a silly question, generated from nervous excitement in the moment. However, Moyers pointed out later that the question itself is a most important one to ask. So this morning, I want to do that, but I want not just to ask and have us think about who we are, but how we found ourselves, how we became who we are, or better said, how we are becoming who we are, because who we are is not a static thing. Now, there are those that would tell us that most everything about who we are is determined by our genes, our DNA. In essence, our genetic code predetermines who we will be. Now, I don't deny the role that DNA plays in determining whether you might develop cancer or some other genetic illness, or what color your hair will be, or even, like some of us, if you're going to lose your hair. But those traits don't constitute who we really are. You know, this idea of our paths being predetermined is not limited to our bodies or even our lifespan. Our Calvinist pilgrim ancestors were theological predeterminists. They actually believed that whether or not you were saved was determined before you were born. In fact, from the beginning of time. And what you did in this world, how you interacted with others, had no bearing on who you ultimately were. Now, our liberal Christian forebears rejected that idea, saying what you do in this world matters. It is the way you live your life that determines who you are. There are some who would tell us that we best find ourselves, find who we are, by going inward in the quiet of our mind. It's there that who we are is revealed. And again, I don't deny the importance of self-reflection and meditation and prayer and coming to know ourselves. In fact, a spiritual practice can be a steady guide on the journey of self-discovery, and I know that's true for me. Private reflection, prayer, meditation, even individual therapy are all important means of self-understanding. But I believe it is in group relationships that the door is open even wider to step inside ourselves. In our interactions with others, we continually greet parts of ourself that we may not even have known were there. The poet Rainer Maria Rilke put it this way: what have we learned from living since we started except to find in others what we are? I've been reflecting on Rilke's lines. They suggest that we learn who and what we are from others, that relationships are critical to our personal self-definition. Some of those relationships are ones in which we are born into or adopted into, such as the family that raised us. Many of us have found a good part of who we are in our relationship to parents or grandparents, aunts, uncles, siblings. And as we grow older, we become part of larger groups, sometimes by choice, but often not. You know, as a child, you probably didn't choose the neighborhood in which you lived, but the interactions that you had living in that neighborhood, good or bad, I would guess profoundly shaped who you are. Some of our families actively chose particular schools for us to attend, but many of us went to whatever public school was in our district. In our interactions with that group of students and teachers led us to believe certain things about ourselves. As we grew older, we made decisions about what groups we would be part of and the people with whom we will be in relationship. And even when we don't fully realize it, these decisions hugely impact who we are. I told you a bit of this story before, but I want to share with you again because it brings that point home, I think. During the height of the AIDS crisis, I was a pretty successful lawyer, enjoying what I was doing, and I became involved in a group that provided legal assistance to those with AIDS in central Massachusetts. And I volunteered some of my time to handle legal problems that people with AIDS were facing. And also at the same time, I had a home in Provincetown and regularly attended the Unitarian Universalist Church there. Many gay men with AIDS had gone to this more accepting community to find some peace and acceptance in their final days and had become part of the church. Every Sunday that I was there, their lives touched mine. Go back to the volunteer work. Even though I was primarily a trial lawyer, most of the time my volunteer legal work for this AIDS organization involved writing simple wills, because frankly at that time AIDS was a death sentence. Then one day I was asked by one of the AIDS support groups if I would represent a young man named Mike. When I met him, he was very frail and weak. It was in fact clear to me that death was probably not far off for him. I learned that a hateful, homophobic neighbor had manipulated the court system in order to have criminal charges issued against him. In our initial meeting, he told me that the woman had employed every conceivable form of harassment against him and his now deceased partner. I learned, in fact, even that she had banged on the walls of their home with a stick and shouted hate language on the very day his partner was dying in the house. And since his death, as unbelievable as this sounds, she had gone to the cemetery with a wheelbarrow of garbage and dumped it on the grave. Yes, I agreed to represent him. But I suggested that he might be really too frail to go to court, and that I could probably take care of the problem for him without him having to do that. But to my surprise, he said no, that he wanted to go to court. He didn't want me to do what most people want lawyers to do, and that's take the problem and solve it. Instead, he wanted me to walk with him through the problem. Now, I was always passionate about my cases, but I've never felt like I did the day I went to court with Mike. It's a long story, but let's just go ahead. After the matter was successfully concluded, Mike said to me words that I will never forget. He thanked me for my help, and he said, "You've been more than just a lawyer, you've been my minister." These words were both shocking to me and strangely expected at the same time. And I actually have no memory of how I got home that day. But when I did, there was nothing more to debate and toss around in my mind. I applied to Harvard Divinity School, was accepted, and here I am, a minister. But you know, as I look back, as powerful as that individual connection with Mike was, it really was just the icing on the cake, because it was the culmination of a series of group interactions and relationships at that time in my life that actually brought me to discover who I was. The groups in which I was active, that AIDS Project and the Unitarian Universalist Church in Provincetown, were places where I was learning things about myself that I know no amount of self-reflection would ever have taught me. It was in the engagement with these people, and only in that, that I found out that I was a minister. Sociologists tell us that we are largely created by our network of relationships. That doesn't mean if we've been raised in a situation that has led us to have a negative self-image, we must remain in the same place for our entire lives. We're all works in progress. What it does mean, I think, is that at every point in our lives, we need to seek out those positive relationships that help us discover what really is deep inside of us. At a certain level, this observation is a pretty obvious one, particularly when we look to our own past and reflect on how this person or that group helped to shape who we are. But sometimes I think many of us, in our strong individualism, think of ourselves as a fait accompli. This idea of making it on your own, doing it on your own, is so ingrained in our culture. The American capitalist system breeds strident individualism and competition. Our own Unitarian and American histories is often one presented as one of strong individualism and self-reliance. Think how different that is from that South African culture concept of Ubuntu, the one that Desmond Tutu explained in the reading to us this morning. He said Ubuntu is the essence of being human. Interconnectedness, not independence or self-reliance, is really what defines us. I am what I am because of who we all are. We're not just talking here about the good that the whole community does when we come together in our interconnection. We're talking about something much deeper, and that is the idea that who we are individually is defined by the groups that we're part of. In the book of James, there is a famous passage that Unitarian Universalists often like to quote: "By your deeds shall you be known." And as a faith of action with a long history of social justice work, we've emphasized deeds over creeds in our theology for centuries. Well, the 20th century Unitarian Universalist theologian James Luther Adams did a bit of a takeoff on that biblical teaching. And he suggests something really interesting for our time. He says that in today's world, it's by your groups shall you be known. Now, probably our first thought when we hear those words is that others will have some idea about who we are when they come to know what groups we belong to. And of course, that's true. But there's more to this teaching than just how others know us. What I'm suggesting to you this morning is that we come to better know ourselves, to know our beliefs, to know our passions, to know where our heart is within the context of our relationships. To put it another way, the very deep question of who I am is often answered by exploring the question, whose I am. So it is that we truly find ourselves only in our relationships. We are who we are because of the groups we belong to. And I think in no group can that be more true than in a church community. You know, there's lots of good reasons to be part of a church, but there's no better reason to participate in the life of the church than to discover yourself, to challenge yourself to really discover what it is that you believe, and then let those beliefs guide your life. Ours is a relational theology. We learn what is ultimate and true for us, not through indoctrination, not through a retreat away from the world, but we learn best what's true for us, our faith, by engaging in meaningful relationships and activities in a community just like this one. Today, ours is a theology not so much of self-reliance as it once was, but of interdependence, a theology I think beautifully expressed in the anthem you heard the choir sing earlier. Think of those words. We are the boat, we are the sea, I sail in you, you sail in me. Somos el barco, somos el mar, yo navego en ti, tú navegas en mí. It is in sailing in each other that we discover who we are. So on this Sunday, when we return to our regular church year, when new people join us to see who we are and what this tradition offers, I think it's so important that we recall this central role of the church. You may be coming here for religious education for your kids, or for spiritual inspiration from the music or the worship. You may be coming here because of the rich tradition, or because of the many ways offered to serve others and advance social justice causes. Yes, we do all that and more, and it's important, and we're glad that so many of you are part of it. But it all starts with finding yourself, and not once, but again and again. In the past 15 years as minister of this wonderful church, I have witnessed it so many times. Finding oneself may not have been the reason folks came to this church, but it may not have been their plan at all. They didn't even know that they didn't know themselves, perhaps. But in their working on social justice or serving those in needs or on a committee or participating in small group ministry or in the choir or teaching religious education, many of them found themselves. You know, not very long ago, a person who'd been in our small group ministry program for a couple of years made this observation. She said, "I joined the group to meet new people and learn more about other folks in the church. And I did. But what I really did was learn more about myself. As I listened to others share their experiences, I was surprised to discover many things about who I am. I know myself better by participating in that small group ministry program." You know, it's always flattering to hear someone say they come here to hear the great sermons or the excellent music. But in truth, I hope you come here for something deeper. I hope you come here to learn and be reminded who you are. I hope you come in again and again to find yourself. Your coming here on Sunday morning, it is a decision about whom you want to be with, and that decision has a great deal of influence on who you are. As Bill Moyers was asked by that excited man in the coffee shop, "Do you know who you are?" Well, I can't answer the question for you, but I can tell you this, that I believe that it is in a community like this church where you can best find the answer to the question. As Rilke put it, what have we learned from living since we started, except to find in others what we are?